Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, first of my good evening. Welcome to Update, a rundown of the day's main news. So coming up in the next half hour, the first day of the government conference is just about drawing to a close around now. So what were the key announcements to come out of today? And staying with politics, a former chief minister's warning that very little tends to get done in that final year of a government's term. Next House of Keys general election is a year tomorrow. In sport, we're going to bring you the latest from FC Isle of Man following the news that manager Paul Jones has stepped down. And we'll also be finding out what you can take away from a challenge that doesn't quite go according to plan. We'll also keep an eye on the weather, the traffic and the travel as well. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can text the studio. It's 166 177. We'll start with a roundup of the main news headlines with Amy Fastamai.
The Infrastructure Minister has faced questions at the government conference today regarding her newly published transport strategy. Michelle Hayward insists public feedback has been taken into account when setting the document, which outlines how the DOI plans to improve road safety, support active travel and create better external links to and from the island over the next 10 years.
Lots of people directing us into the way, and that's been incorporated into this final document. But as I say, a lot of these work streams are already ongoing, but they've just not been perhaps spelt out that that's what we're doing.
The chair of a former Tynwald committee on whistleblowing is calling for a new investigation into the topic. Onken MHK Julie Edge will ask for a select committee to look at the impact on public sector employers and employees, policies on non-disclosure agreements, and to report back to Tynwald by March next year. She says it's an important issue to get right.
We need to stop it going wrong in the first place, make sure it's clear policy for everybody to be simple to follow. Everybody should be trained on it. I'm not so sure that's happening.
The former chief minister says very little usually gets done in the final year before a general election. Howard Quayle believes backbench MHKs avoid backing contentious policies which could harm their re-election chances. A year away from the next election, he says that should focus government's direction.
It's a time to do more good for the island, to get things achieved, to improve the lot of the people in the last 12 months and show what they've been doing.
The Department of Infrastructure has recently appointed 9 new bus drivers, in addition to the 5 who started in the job this year. A Tynwald written question has revealed they're currently finalising a recruitment process following well-documented staff shortages in recent years. To international news now, and Sir Ed Davies set the Lib Dems a target of outperforming the Conservatives at the UK's next election. During his keynote speech at the party conference in Bournemouth, he claimed Trump's America would be the blueprint for Farage's Britain if he got into power. Donald Trump's dismissed climate change as the greatest con job in the world as he addressed the United Nations General Assembly. The US president doubled down on his scepticism of global environmental initiatives and multilateral institutions, including the UN itself. And one of the most well-known and popular figures in the world of cricket has died. Test umpire and Yorkshire's club president Dickie Bird was 92. Those are your headlines. I'll be back with your news in full at 6.
Thanks very much, Amy. Now the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. So dry with sunny spells this evening, clear skies overnight. There'll be light winds and minimum temperatures will be around 9. And it'll stay dry tomorrow with bright or sunny intervals, light to moderate southeast winds and top temperatures tomorrow around 16. Thursday and Friday are a pretty similar picture. Again, top temperatures still around 16. Sunset this evening, 7:15. Sunrise tomorrow morning, 7:06.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674-573 or visit the showroom on the Snugbra Trading Estate.
Lost your keys? Got locked out? Get in with Kevin's Keys. Your fast, reliable locksmiths 24-7. Homes, cars and bikes. Kevin's Keys do it all. And why not get a spare set cut and chipped just in case? Call Kevin on 287-287.
At Bigode Cattery, we have been caring for animals for over 50 years. As a cattery, we care for customers' cats and treat them as our own. Contact Bigode Cattery on 676 947 or find Bigode Cattery on Facebook.
SMS Trading. New and second-hand furniture from flat pack to fully built. See our range at 3 St Paul Square, Ramsey. All island delivery and man-in-a-van service available. Call SMS Trading on 315151 or find SMS Trading on Facebook.
Reach the Isle of Man's biggest radio audience with Manx Radio. Airtime sponsorship and digital opportunities available. For more information on how we can help your business grow its market share, contact the friendly, experienced team on sales at manxradio.com.
It is 5 past 5 here on Update. So as we've been hearing throughout the day, this year's government conference got underway this morning at the Comus Hotel. Described as an open platform to engage with government representatives on strategic priorities crucial to business, it features 2 days of presentations from politicians and key stakeholders. So speaking on Manx Radio's breakfast programme this morning, the Cabinet Office Minister David Ashford MHK confirmed around 400 people had signed up for each day and also said the agenda promised something for everyone.
It is. It's got a very much an economic focus, but it is open for everyone. And I think there probably will be something for everyone in the agenda that we've actually pulled together. We've had, of course, the Listening to You events around the island where ministers have gone out, council ministers as a whole has gone out to speak to the public in each of the regions. So that's been much more public fronting Q&A style. This is much more around actually what we need to do economically for the benefit of the island over the next 12 months and beyond.
There was some criticism last year from backbenchers that there were some quite big announcements about policy that they felt perhaps should have come through the Tynwald process rather than on stage at the conference. Is that something that's been taken into account this time?
Well, I am very keen as a member of the House of Keys and a parliamentarian that big announcements are made in Tynwald and Tynwald members get to know them first. If there's anything very big to say, we will ensure that Tynwald members have sight of it first.
That's the Cabinet Office Minister David Ashford, who is talking to Sian on breakfast this morning. Well, the Isle of Man government is to establish a new National Office for AI Development and Regulation. The Chief Minister made that relatively big announcement during his welcome address at the conference this morning, as Siobhan Fletcher reports.
The Chief Minister says that the capabilities of artificial intelligence will significantly challenge the status quo and that those who are unprepared will struggle to remain competitive. Alfred Cannon also highlighted the potential risks to the economy that come from such rapid changes in technology, saying these also needed consideration. He said the public and private sectors must work in lockstep to realise and recognise the benefits and opportunities presented by rapid advancements in technology. Establishing a National Office for AI Development and Regulation will enable both government and business to work together in coordinating and driving forward the island's response to the AI revolution. He added that it was clear, as part of the development of this tech, governments are going to be challenged to regulate. It's hoped that the new national office will be established before the end of this year, and government says it will also play a role in bringing forward its plans to digitise public services and improve efficiency as part of its efforts to save £50 million over the next 5 years. Meanwhile, Mr. Cannon also announced the government is going to refresh its economic strategy to reflect the pace and scale of global change. He said the core foundations of its strategy, Our Island, Our Future, which was approved by Tynwald in November 2022, remain a good basis on which to continue to move the island forward. However, he says it would be irresponsible not to adjust the government's thinking in a world that's rapidly changing.
Siobhan Fletcher reporting. Well, just the final thing for now on the government conference. As we said, it's taking place at the Comus Hotel. So if you were in that area this morning, you might have noticed something because Amnesty International Isle of Man held a demonstration calling on the government to take further action in respect of actions carried out by Israel in Gaza. Lewis has the details on this one.
The group says its demonstration this morning was a call to the Isle of Man government to send a much stronger message about its concerns regarding UK arms sales, military training, surveillance assistance, lack of sanctions and trade restrictions. Last week, for the first time, a commission established by the United Nations concluded Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. The report claimed it is clear that there is an intent to destroy the Palestinians in the enclave. Israel denies the claim, accusing the organisation of being biased. In the days since, countries including the UK, Australia, Canada, Portugal, and now France have officially recognised a state of Palestine. In a new statement, Amnesty International Isle of Man says countries that have recognised Palestinian statehood now have obligations to respect the political integrity of the state of Palestine under international law. As we have delegated these responsibilities to the UK government, it says, we need to send a much stronger message about our concerns. It says for 2 years, our government has aligned us fully with UK policy, which has led to allegations from highly respected international organisations, charities and NGOs of complicity in these abhorrent war crimes and crimes against humanity. If not now, it asks, when is the Isle of Man going to express grave concern that by proxy we are also considered to be in breach of international laws and treaties? Well, earlier this month, Amnesty International Isle of Man vowed to host a series of demonstrations at key locations and events over the coming month. Manx Radio has contacted the Isle of Man government for comment.
Lewis Foster reporting there. So it's just gone 5:10 here on Update. And a breaking news story this morning was the fact that FC Isle of Man manager Paul Jones had stepped down from his post with immediate effect. The club confirmed the news in a statement, with the team currently sitting 22nd in the NWCFL Premier Division. Well, our sports editor Rob Pritchard is with me now. So Rob, what can you tell us about this?
Yeah, first time I, Beth. So FC Isle of Man has confirmed that Paul Jones has left his position as first team manager at the club, and the statement from FC Isle of Man reads as follows. FC Isle of Man can confirm that after much discussion and review, Paul Jones will be stepping down from his role as manager with immediate effect. Paul has been an instrumental figure in the history of the Ravens, playing a pivotal role in the creation of the club in 2018. He took interim charge of the team in November 2022 and was appointed as the club's full-time manager ahead of the 23-24 season. The club would like to place on record its immense gratitude to Paul for his enormous contribution over many years. His passion, dedication and hard work were critical in not only establishing FC Isle of Man, but also in guiding the team through an important period of its development. Everyone at FC Isle of Man wishes Paul and his family the very best for the future. An announcement on the new manager will follow shortly.
And Rob, I think it's fair to say this comes at a time when the team has been struggling at the start of this latest season.
Yes, it has been a tough start to the 2025-26 campaign for the Ravens. They've managed just 2 wins from 13 games so far and sit just 1 point above the relegation zone. Their latest result was a 0-0 draw away at Pilkington last Saturday. Well, FC Isle of Man had previously confirmed that its latest review of the season would be taking place after that game of last Saturday, something which Paul Jones told us ahead of the Pilkington match was standard procedure at FC Isle of Man for this point in the season. Well, when Paul Jones took over as FC Isle of Man first team manager on an interim basis in November 2022, he guided them to a 13th place finish before being appointed as manager permanently ahead of the 23-24 season. The team improved again that season, going on to finish 9th. However, things didn't turn out quite as well for them in 24-25, as a poor run of results in the second half of the campaign in particular saw them eventually end the season in 15th. The club issued a statement in April this year toward the end of the 24-25 season, confirming Jones would be staying in his position and that he had the backing of both his players and the board, but that there was a shared disappointment in how results had gone to that point. Fast forward 5 months, and it seems that in the wake of recent results, the decision has been taken that a change of management is the solution going forward.
So that's what the club has confirmed then today. I understand there's been reaction already from FC Isle of Man supporters.
Yes, since the announcement, there's been plenty of supporters commenting on social media, with many thanking Jones for his dedication and service to the club. There seems to be a mix of opinions as to whether this was the right decision or not. Among those opinions, some believe that Paul Jones was doing his best with a young, developing and in some cases inexperienced team, and that he has a limited pool of players to pick from, with many having not played at this level before joining. On the other side, there are others who think it is the correct decision, with one stating that whilst they believe Jones was trying his best, it just didn't seem to be the right fit anymore.
So can we ask them what is next for FC Isle of Man at this stage?
So the club has said that an announcement on a new manager will follow shortly. We have no other specifics on that at this stage. The team now has a near 2 week gap until its next match, as they don't have a fixture this coming weekend. This weekend there are cup competitions being played, which FC Isle of Man is not involved in. FC Isle of Man's next scheduled match is on Saturday the 4th of October at home against Barnoldswick Town.
Rob, thank you very much indeed.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside Tyres and Service Centre.
Well, nothing to report on the police pages, which is always good news. As ever, if you spot anything you're able to let us know about, that would be great. It's just the usual roadworks have been out and about. Down at the Steam Packet, the Manxman has literally just arrived into Douglas Harbour. It will be heading out again for Heysham as scheduled at 7:15 this evening. The Mananin also on its way to Liverpool. It's expected to get there in around about 15 minutes, and all okay down at the airport as well.
Quayside Tyres and Service Centre, with 1 year's free engine warranty from Castrol. Get more with Quayside.
It is just about 5:15. The Justice and Home Affairs Minister says the new Sexual Offences and Obscene Publications Act 2021 is to be reviewed as planned imminently. Now, this legislation's been in operation for around 18 months after it was switched on in March last year. But sentences for those convicted of child sexual offences have been under the spotlight in recent weeks, with calls from some for a national inquiry into the topic. Well, Jane Paul Wilson has been talking to Siobhan about the confusion that she says often arises due to a disconnect between when criminals are convicted versus when they committed the crimes.
We did switch on, if you like, our modern sexual offences legislation in March 2024. And that legislation introduced a number of new offences. Offences that I suppose are older legislation. It just predated some of the types of offending that are available now and do happen. And the new legislation also set some higher maximum sentences for certain offences, higher than the original law. However, one of the things that is the case is we are seeing a number of what I would call historic reporting of offences, which is a good thing. So people are coming forward and raising their concerns about something that may have happened to them a little while ago. If the offending happened before the new law took effect in March 2024, then it is investigated and prosecuted under our previous legislation. And so what that can mean in practice is sometimes the types of things that people are now coming forward to the police about, if there wasn't a specific offence under the old law that covered it, that can be problematic. But also sometimes the sentence that might have been available might have been lower under the old law. So, for example, in 2024-25, across that year, we know that around 180 sexual offences began to be investigated by the police. And of those that began to be investigated, 97 were under the old law and 83 could be brought forward under the new law. So what you will see in practice, and it may not always be clear, I guess, to members of the public, is you will see some cases still coming forward, being investigated and prosecuted, but under the previous legal framework.
Under the new legislation, we cannot name the person accused of that crime because they're not convicted yet. That's like a sort of clause within that law. And I think maybe that causes a level of confusion because we're not naming them due to the newer act. But what you're saying is they might still be getting prosecuted under the previous act.
Yes, you're right, because the anonymity provisions under the new law, which apply to people who are facing trial or prosecution, and to victims and witnesses, they apply to cases that happen since the new legislation is in place, even if what is being prosecuted is an older offence.
That is the Justice and Home Affairs Minister Jane Paul Wilson explaining some of the complexities around sentencing to Siobhan Fletcher. There's much more to that interview. You can find it in full as the latest Manx newscast at manxradio.com. So we're going to stay with the notion of politics because a former chief minister has warned that very little usually gets done in the final year of a government's term. Howard Quayle, who led the island through the COVID-19 pandemic from 2016 to 2021, says it's a sad reality of the system. His comments come as the countdown begins with just about a year to go until the 2026 House of Keys general election.
The ministers, if they're standing again and want to get re-elected, they want to be able to tell a good story. They don't want anything too bad from a newsworthy point of view happening in the last 12 months. But equally, I think they should look upon it. It's a time to do more good for the island, to get things achieved, to improve the lot of the people in the last 12 months and show what they've been doing. You know, if they've worked hard in the previous 4 years, if they've moved legislation which has improved the lot of the people, then they should have a proud record. And I think as long as you explain things, that was one of the benefits for me personally of the COVID briefings that we did. We were able to speak directly to the people of the Isle of Man. Obviously, the media were then questioning us. We'd do our best to answer to the best of our capabilities, but the people could see for themselves, hear, listen, and decide whether they liked what you were doing. And sometimes if you've got a bad news story or something you want to move forward, that isn't necessarily going to be popular short term. I think if you explain it properly to the people, most people are reasonable and say, well, yeah, I don't really like this idea, but I can see why they're doing it. It's for the good of my children, the good of my grandchildren. So I don't think they should always be too frightened to support potentially short-term unpopular for long-term gain for the people of the island.
That is the former Chief Minister Howard Quayle with some interesting thoughts there on a year before an election. And that year is actually, it's a year exactly tomorrow until the general election 2026. And we really want to know what you think the main issues are. What do you want to see in the candidate manifestos? And if your MHKs decided to stand again, would they get your vote? Your thoughts in a survey that we have at maxradio.com will really help shape Manx Radio's election coverage over the next year. So do take a couple of minutes to tell us what you think and hopefully help you make those all important decisions when we go to the polls in 2026. It's 20 past five now, and we heard over the weekend news about Onchan Park's bumper boats potentially being closed. Well, what we understand now from Onchan commissioners is that that isn't the case. I'm joined by local democracy reporter Emma Draper, who was at the local authority meeting last night. So Emma, tell us then, what is happening with the bumper boats?
So the bumper boats at Onchan Park will be remaining open, and the commissioners are not closing the attraction anytime soon. However, the board members were told that there are issues with the brackets and mounts which keep the engine attached to the boat. These were reported during the summer, and some of these are now classed by the staff as beyond economical repair.
So how old are the boats, and what options do the commissioners have to keep them at the park?
So the commissioners said the boats and hulls are about 30 years old, but the engines were last replaced in 2021. And officers also said that some of the boats have had to be taken out of action due to damage on the hulls and brackets. And a number of options were presented to the commissioners, which included purchasing brand new boats to replace the old stock, try and find someone on island to create custom hulls for the boats, or deal with any maintenance issues with the boats and engines as they arise. There's also a need for an engine lift at the bumper boat lake to prevent injuries to staff when these need to be removed.
And do we know then how much this is going to cost Onchan commissioners, or when we can expect to see these new and improved bumper boats?
So the cost of the project hasn't been revealed, as the discussion at the meeting yesterday was to establish that there was an issue that needed solving and to give officers permission to investigate further. We do know that there will be significant expenditure on the facility at the park, but the final costings and designs are due to go back to the board before the start of the summer season in 2026.
Emma Draper, thank you very much indeed. The bumper boats, they're such a staple, aren't they? I think we've all probably been on them. Have you been on been on the bumper boats?
Oh, definitely.
You?
And I'm sure my brother's probably got bruises and stuff from, like, you know, going into siblings and stuff on the boats, trying to get them to tip over, you know, get him in the water type thing.
I know,
thing,
so. Yeah. It's definitely something I think that every young person in the Isle of Man has done at some point. Emma, thank you so much as ever. You can find out more about that story at manxradio.com. And we're going to stay with the water theme now, because earlier this month, a local man took on a mammoth swimming challenge to raise money for Rebecca House Children's Hospice and the Children's Centre. Martin Malone was aiming to swing continuously for 24 hours at St Andrew's Lakes, Kent, as part of the ambitious Expedition Limitless 2026 fundraising campaign. Called the Big Swim, Martin trained really hard for the event, and while it didn't all go exactly to plan, he told me he'd learnt a great deal from the experience and has also raised thousands of pounds.
Up to 2 weeks before the swim, I was in great shape, perfect condition, and I injured my left shoulder about 2 weeks before. Not a bad injury, but enough to cause me some concern. So on the morning of the big swim, it was a slight concern for me, and I did go into it thinking, I hope my shoulder holds up. Did for the first 8.5 hours, and then it started to ache, and then that ache became a pain, and the pain became worse and worse, to the point where just over 16 hours of actual swimming time, the safety crew decided to put me out. By then I covered 30.5 kilometres, and in all of the knives, because my daughter was with me, and in all of the knives, she said to me, Dad, if you swim for 2 more hours and wreck your shoulder, you're not going to raise any more money. By then, we'd raised a significant amount of money, so £30,250, which is just mind-blowing. I'd set out with a target of 50, which is really ambitious, hoping to raise maybe 20, 25. So that made a lot of sense to me, but I still wasn't going to make the call. And the safety crew eventually said, you're in too much pain, we're going to pull you out. But we'd done what we set out to do. We'd raised a lot of money, so I can't be too unhappy with that. Although, unfinished business in my own head, I'll have to attempt it again at some point.
But there's something to learn from that, and I suppose that sort of fits into the whole model of Expedition Limitless, is that actually, you know, sometimes these setbacks do happen, but the important thing is mentally to think, okay, well, that didn't happen at that point, but there could be another time in the future, because I'm guessing, like you said, unfinished business, it's possibly going to be something you attempt again.
Possibly, yeah. I'm okay using the word failure, because that's what it means. I failed to achieve the task, which is swimming for 24 hours, and failure is not a bad word in my opinion. I failed, and I've learned from that so many things. I've learned probably more from failing than I would have done if I had you know, succeeded in the 24 hours. And I think people don't be afraid to fail, because if you don't have a go, you're never going to fail. But if you don't fail, you'll never learn. You'll never see where your limits are. You know, I found the limits of my shoulder 2 weeks ago. But I think personally that people should get out of the comfort zone more often and don't be afraid to fail. We learn more when we fail. Absolutely.
That is Martin Malone from Expedition Limitless. And it was an incredible challenge that he took on. I mean, he still did so well. 16 hours continuous swimming. And there is a newscast, a full interview with Martin. Quite a few interesting questions answered about what it takes to do a swim of that length in there as well. You can find that at the Manx Radio website. And Rob's back with some more sports news. Good evening again.
Fast am I. Well, first off, Isle of Man equestrian competitor Yasmin Ingham and Great Britain have finished sixth in the team standings at this year's FEI event. Eventing European Championships. The rider from Greba, who's now based in Cheshire, was part of a six-strong GB squad, which went into the competition as defending champions at Blenheim Palace in Oxfordshire from the 18th to the 21st of September. Individually, however, Great Britain enjoyed more success because Laura Collett secured individual gold and fellow GB competitor Tom McEwen claimed individual bronze. Overall team winners for 2025 were Germany with a combined score of 124.9, followed by Ireland in second on 161.9, and rounding out the team top three was France on 167.5. Well, for Ingham, it had been a positive start after the opening dressage sessions last Thursday and Friday, where she was running inside the top 10 and was as high as joint third on day one. However, a fall for her and horse Rehi DJ during the cross-country test last Saturday ultimately saw them eliminated from the event. Both rider and horse were okay following the fall. Elsewhere, Athletics and Ollie Lockley and Kirsty Barber have claimed the top spots in this year's Peel to Douglas trail run. Crossing the finish line more than 3 minutes clear of his nearest challenger, Lockley's time of 50 minutes and 53 seconds saw him surge to a third consecutive win at the meeting, his seventh overall and a new record time. Furthermore, that time was also a full 1 minute and 15 seconds quicker than his previous personal best in the race from last year. Second spot went to Jonathan Collier, who recorded a time of 53 minutes 55 seconds, with third place going to Jack Ockle, who clocked 55 minutes and 40 seconds. Elsewhere, Barber won the women's event for the first time with her pace of 1 hour, 8 minutes and 4 seconds, also seeing her finish 19th overall. The other members of the women's top three were Joanne Sharder in second and Emily Brideson in third. Meanwhile, the 2025 race also saw a record number of finishes, with 103 athletes completing the course. The previous best was 88. And finally, Leslie Slight won a silver medal at the National Field Archery Society National Championships last weekend. Competing on the 13th and 14th of September, Leslie competed in the ladies' traditional bow hunter class, where she came second. The event was held at Dern Valley Field Archery Club near Wakefield, where Roger Slight also took part. However, he had slightly less success as he competed in the gents' traditional bow hunter class, finishing in 28th position.
Rob, thank you very much indeed. Well, that is all from Update tonight. Thank you as ever for your company. Coming up next, it's an Island Life special with Amy, and it's about dementia because September is Dementia Awareness Month. And this programme is all about myth-busting some common misconceptions and how you can support a loved one who is living with dementia. After that, Greatest Hits with Chris Kinley from 6 at 9. It's The Folk Show with John Barker before Dave Moore is here with After Hours from 10. So whatever you're doing this evening, have a good one, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.